Good evening. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower, and we have another great show dealing with metaphysics and spirituality. Tonight, we're going to continue on the metaphysics of planets and how planets are actually designed to create more life, and specifically in our planet, to create life that we call etheric physical life, which is, well, most of you are familiar with that. That's us, you know, physical life. Some planets are not in that ball game, and we'll try to get to talk a little bit about those tonight. This is volume two, so I will very, very briefly go over just a bit of what I covered last week so that catch some of you up who were not listening and for those of you who were to refresh you about what we went over. If you would like to call in, you can, and you can reach us at 877-876-5227 in the U.S., How about 888-815-9756 if you're in Canada? Yep, you can call in and you can say whatever you like to say about anything dealing with metaphysics, spirituality, and, of course, anything we're going to be talking about tonight. Now, let me cover just a little bit of what I went into last week so that we can kind of be on the same page. I hope so. And if you don't catch it all, you know, you can always go back to last week's show and listen to the archives. But hopefully you'll also be able to piece it together with what we say further tonight. So to begin with, one of the concepts which I think is very important to understand is that planets are ways of growing more of our Creator, which is through the principle of what we call life. And not all planets do it in the same way. Physical life, as we have in this world, starts at the lowest level of development that you can create life in our universe, and that is at a level in which there is only one huge dimension, which we call three dimensions of time and space. And those three dimensions that we're so familiar with are height, width, and depth. And within those three dimensions, life finds it most difficult to be developed. It takes an extremely long period of time to create even the most rudimentary types of life, because in the dimensions where there are less dimensions, which we are in the lowest or the least amount of dimensions of time and space, life has the most amount of difficulty of creating something called interaction. And interaction comes from life developing sense and senses, and eventually thought, and the ability to interact with, through its senses and information, with other kinds of life, to build itself up and to create itself into greater and greater levels of what we call life. And so this is a critical element in understanding the design of planets. Our planet is starting at the basement, so you would expect that it goes pretty darn slow, and it takes a lot of time. It is quite difficult. Many types of life actually come and go. And even before there's life, there's pre-life, which includes chemicals and minerals and the things that we don't usually recognize as being life. So I call them pre-life. Some other people maybe just say non-sentient things. But it doesn't really matter how you define it. I think the important issue is that we have to spend a large amount of time, because we're a physical world, in developing both pre-life and life to get to the point where we are today. Now, last week I described this time as about 4.5 billion years, of which about 4.1 billion of it was with some type of life present, whereas about, you know, we'll give or take, about 400 million years of it, there was no life, but there was a lot of pre-life type of things going on. The chemistry of the planet had to be developed, and it had to be developed in a way that would allow the kind of life that would eventually take root here to happen. Now, some people think that life came from comets and or asteroids, and that's probably true. It may not be that all life came to Earth that way, but some life probably did, in the fact that there is a whole bunch of life from other planets floating out frozen in space and waiting to come to a planet like ours. How many planets are there with life? Almost countless. Because we are at the basement, there are many planets that are gas giants that are either too close to or too far from their sun in comparison to Earth, that have life forms on them that exist in dimensions of time and space that we are not very familiar with as human beings in the physical world, but that actually allows life to grow more easily and more in a more advanced way. And that life oftentimes had a much earlier beginning on a physical planet like Earth, but then developed itself to the point where it could live on a planet that was very dimensionally in another realm. Some of these planets we can't even see. Other ones that we can see just look like big gaseous balls, but we would think them to be lifeless. They actually have life on them. It's just that dimensionally that life exists outside of the scope of where we can see it. That's a little complicated, I understand, but if people live in extra dimensions than the ones that we are familiar with, we won't be able to see them. They might be able to see us, but we can't see them because our senses don't record those dimensions, so we're unaware of them. And it kind of makes sense if you think about it. There's lots of things we're unaware of. We think the entire universe, as an example, is the etheric physical universe, but it is really just a dimension in it. And the rest of the universe, a vast amount greater than the etheric physical, is beyond our senses. And I'm talking about even the senses that we use in the most advanced forms of ultraviolet telescopes and infrared and all the other frequencies, gamma rays, all these things, which are actually very high levels of electromagnetic radiation, they still are part of the etheric physical or electromagnetic physical, for those of you who are more scientifically inclined, parts of our universe. That part, those parts we are familiar with. But the rest of the universe, hey, we really don't know much about it unless you've been reading some of the stuff I've written or other metaphysical writers. They are telling you about it. And some of them are doing a pretty good job. Others, they just give you a little tidbit here and there. Okay, what else do we go into? Well, our planet has, interestingly, like whole senses that are in the body of beings that exist outside of our universe, amazingly, in the next universe greater than this universe. The whole universe that we exist in has beings that exist outside of it that have bodies within it. Okay, just bodies now. And that on a planet like Earth, the life on Earth, the whole life system on Earth, is divided up into kingdoms. And within each kingdom has senses that help to develop the body of the planet that contributes to the consciousness of beings that are in other universes, not just other dimensions of time and space. Amazing. I mean, I know that's way out there and it's hard to follow. It was hard to follow last week when I went through it, and it's probably even harder to go through it this week when I'm going even faster. But still, you can get a picture of a really, really, really big system. And planets contribute to this by being the bodies of beings of such greatness that they can exist outside of our entire universe and still sense life within this universe and help to develop life for the being that helped to create this universe. They're sort of like co-creators from outside this universe, and to not interrupt the being that exists as this entire universe, they only help out in certain limited ways, through existing planets that fit the, we'll call it the physics, of what the being that created our universe, the creator of our universe, decided was going to be the model for how planets and dimensions and other things are going to fit together. Very interesting. So it's like the whole menagerie of universes are interconnected by great beings who are all participating from even outside, and others that, of course, exist within this universe as well. An amazing process, one which kind of stretches our minds, so to speak. Okay, so different parts of life are actually centers, and I spoke about some of the parts of life as they developed various consciousness and also senses in themselves last week. It was most interesting as we got up to and through, I I guess dinosaurs, one of my kind of favorite, we'll call it animals. And what we learned is that animals are unique in the sense that they can animate themselves. They can move around based upon how they think and feel, whereas, of course, plants generally cannot do that. But they're still life. Animals increase their dimensionality much greater in an astral sense. The astral dimension includes the direction and movement of energy, and you can see how animals fit into that dimension much more so than plants do. Plants somewhat exist in an astral sense, but in a very minimal one, one which is hard for us to see and experience. They have a slight amount of astral sense, but it's too slight for us to notice that they're responding astrally, meaning emotionally, to what's going on around them. Whereas animals, that's pretty easy to find out. You can see it in most animals most of the time. Now, this center that is being developed is almost like, some people would refer to it as like a solar plexus center or chakra of the planet itself. And it's developing an emotional sense, and including in that emotional sense a loving sense, and included within the loving sense a sense of overall consciousness that tells the being something about the feelings, what we call feelings, or some people say emotional feelings, but I prefer feelings, of everything else around it and itself, integrated in some way. This is the amazing part about how animals are doing this. And dinosaurs were not the greatest at doing it, but they were the beings that were the preceding element to a new form of animal that would do much better. This new form of animal had been around during the dinosaurs, but because dinosaurs were so incredibly good at something else called intelligent activity, at least activity in general, and somewhat intelligent most of the time, they were so extremely good at their activities that they almost kept these other types of animals completely at bay, and made it very difficult for them to get very large or very, very great numbers, because the dinosaurs were simply better at life in general in terms of intelligence. But this is because during the time the dinosaurs were around, a thing called the third ray was focused extensively on the planet and for more time than not. And it was producing in these creatures a great ability to respond and interact with great, accuracy and overall speed, and a level that was difficult for anything else to match. It allowed them to get very large in some cases. Not all dinosaurs are big. But it also allowed them to outcompete almost any other kind of life form. So all of the life forms were having a more difficult time as being as successful, except for the plants. Plants also respond extremely well to third ray, but they do so much slower that they weren't really that directly into competition with an animal life form, being the dinosaurs. So dinosaurs and plants kind of went together because they were both growing so exceptionally well from this third ray dominance coming in during 180 million years of time, from about 245 million years ago until about 65 million years ago, give or take. During this period of time, there was a huge amount of plant growth, both in the seas and on land. And this supported a huge amount of development of dinosaurs, including very, very large ones, larger than anything that grows today, as a matter of fact. Okay, but eventually we know that dinosaurs came to an end because the third ray focus came to an end, and another kind of focus started, which started off with kind of a fourth ray approach, which is more balanced. It means that there was more of a spiritual nature in comparison to the material nature of the animals, which always allows the animals to become more loving and, in general, more, a representative of God than the prior life form. And in this case, the type of animal we're talking about are mammals. Mammals became, the big cheese animal after the dinosaurs were finished off, some people think, mostly from an asteroid and or comet, but in addition because of changes in climate and also changes in volcanic action. All these things came together and kind of made them disappear fairly quickly. And what remained, besides birds, which were kind of like the descendants, so to speak, of some dinosaurs, was a lot of mammals that were relatively small to begin with, but grew, and developed themselves into another type of life form and another sense of the planet. And I want you to think about this as like a chakra or sense of the planet that gave the planet much more sense of love, a much greater sense of a balance between spiritual living and material living. Dinosaurs are really good at material living, extremely good at taking chunks of meat out of whatever they've been into if they were carnivores, or very, very good at defoliating whole forests if they needed to eat, but not so good at love. Their love was temporary and impermanent and did not hold the kind of love that mammals eventually developed. And so, consequently, the mammals prospered and became a new kind of center on the planet. They also set the stage for the development of something even greater. Because while animals were developing an amazing array of ways of interacting and loving together, sometimes in great conflict as well, because this is a conflicted world, because the whole world itself has confliction in it, and it hasn't developed itself into being a real representation of what God is like. But at least it was moving in that direction by developing mammals as a center. The next step was to try to bring about, try to enhance the animals to the point where they could become something greater. In order to become something greater, they had to achieve inner reflection of the feelings that they were being, that they had and that were being generated within them, that was so much greater than dinosaurs had ever been or any animal before them in general. Now, some of you might say, well, did mammals exist even right along with dinosaurs right in the beginning? Yes, they did. But these are like seed groups. They weren't really going to go very far because the dinosaurs were overzealous in their ability to live and overcompete against the mammals. So the mammals are kind of stuck in a little niche, and they weren't able to develop very far. Once the dinosaurs are gone, then no more reptiles that are going to interfere with them, and now they can, there's of course going to be reptiles left, but not the kind that will severely interfere, and the mammals can now develop themselves further and further. Now, for tens of millions of years, mammals became increasing in size and in ability to think, and also in the ability, maybe for good or bad, to be able to fight and to conquer and to, we'll say, generally be the main survivors. They also were better at a most important quality, which is called adaptation. Adaptation is a way an animal grows by stresses around it and becomes something better in the process in most circumstances. So adaptation is a way to grow life. It's a good way, too. And it's a more spiritual way when the adaptation is not based as much on destruction of other species as it is on the ability to, we'll say, coexist with both other species and other kinds of life forms, including plants. It's very important to understand this concept. Mammals are much better at doing this than anything before them, and they got really good at it during the last couple of million years, and especially, say, the last 10 million years. They were much better at doing this than any creature had ever done this before. So adaptation became a very big thing. Many people talk about specialization and how animals, especially mammals, became specialized. But they also adapted. They adapted more quickly and under greater potential circumstances than anything else around them because the weather became more erratic and more difficult, but it challenged them to become more adaptable. And this is a good thing because in adaptability, when the fourth ray is focused in, an animal can start developing a thing called reflection. It can start thinking about within itself some elements of how it might choose to react in a future encounter, in a future circumstance. And this increases its adaptability. And it was amazing that some of the more advanced animals in the last couple million years got to the point where they were very good at doing this. This is an important understanding. And it happened, it started to happen about 20 million years ago. At the same time that this started to happen in animals, the development of humans began. Not too successful in the beginning, but eventually the human being came online, and instead of having only five senses in two or more bodies, the humans had seven senses in three bodies at a minimum. Now, what does that mean? More senses. Well, humans had a sense of their own creator. No animal has by nature within itself without any contact with humans a sense of its creator. It doesn't understand God. It doesn't understand what God would be. It doesn't understand that there might be a God. Whereas animals that don't have contact with human beings have no sense that they can use to gain that. Whereas if they're around human beings, they might pick a little bit up, little bit of that up from the humans. So pets, as an example, are an exception to this rule and can be a major exception. But in the more normal circumstances where animals are not in contact with humans, those animals generally live in a life in which most of their spiritual part is called a group soul, and they themselves are missing this sense of their own creator. They may love, but they don't love their creator because they don't know it exists. And it's very important to understand that this is a lacking quality that humans are born with. We've got it. They don't. And you might say, well, how is it that humans suddenly get this quality that so many animals seem to lack? And it happens because humans don't have a group soul. The group soul thinks in a preconceived way for millions, potentially, of its species or even subspecies. And it thinks in ways that allows each particular animal to have a set of what we call, well, most of you know this, of course, what we call the general instincts of the animal. And most of the species of those animals respond very much the same way to the same kind of environmental circumstance. This decreases their adaptability. It makes them less creative and unable eventually, which we'll get to this, to sense their own creator. Even though mammals are more adaptive by far and had some ability to reflect a little bit on their environment, they couldn't reflect on their creator because of this lack of sense that they had. Humans can not only reflect on their environment using the fourth ray chakra called the sacral center, just as animals did, but they could go further. They could reflect on their own creator because they had the heart chakra and crown chakra as senses to be able to be used to do that, because those senses sensed their creator. Once they got a sense of their creator, they then could use that added sacral center to reflect on it. Animals had their sacral center to reflect, but they didn't have the sense. I hope you're following me. That's a lot to swallow. That's a lot to think about, isn't it? It's amazing when we think about it, because it tells us that humans and animals share a common trait, the sacral center, and especially mammals. We share that with mammals and the greater adaptability of mammals. But we take a quantum leap, a giant leap beyond that state into being able to reflect on what it's like to be a creator ourselves, what it's like to have a creator, which gives us religions and senses of spirituality and of God. And it gives us a sense of what it means to be virtuous and right and wrong and many other things that humans think about and concern themselves with and animals do not, especially mammals. Okay, so when we look at this whole progression on our planet of developing different centers, we can see that humans play a critical role. Because while the mammals were there and they did a great job in developing the ability to reflect on the material world around themselves and even make plans for how they might change or adapt to that world at times, they couldn't understand the most important thing, why they're here and where they're going and what they came from and what may have created them. All of that's missing. These are the most important questions. And they couldn't ask why life is. Now you know some of the reasons the show is named that. They couldn't do any of that. And yet humans are born with that innate ability because they have these two extra senses, the heart chakra and the crown chakra, in three different bodies that are fully conscious, capable. We're not only capable of sensing God, but we're capable of understanding what that sense means. That's a critical thing. Some animals, by the way, have a heart and crown chakra. They just have no consciousness connected to it. And that means they can't understand what the information is that they're getting. They get some information, but they can't understand it. Now, they can learn to understand if they have contact with human beings. Our own consciousness can be borrowed by our pets and the animals close to us to gain a little bit of understanding about it. So actually, it's possible that maybe your dog or cat or bird or whatever it might be could be developing some level of understanding its own creator, its own meaning in life from you and me and all of us and interrelate with it. Amazing. Okay, well, we're going to be back in about 2.5 minutes, and I'll continue to go into what the metaphysics of planets are. Hopefully this is helping. I'm hoping that many of you are saying, whoa, this stuff is different. Yeah, I hope it is. And when we get back, I'll tell you a lot more. Hopefully we'll also tonight get into what the future is going to look like. So we'll be back in 2.5 minutes.
What book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hon, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. McFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're we're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight we're talking about the metaphysics of planets and what they do and how come they're so important, and also what ours is doing, which I think is probably the most important since we're here. Okay? All right, so to continue my explanation of human beings now. Human beings are a unique center because eventually they incorporate all the other life and pre-life on the planet within their own. This is something that's unique because of their ability to adapt and their ability to become a co-creator themselves. They are able to take all this life and bring it within something that is part of them called civilization. Civilization is the ability to bring in pre-life and life and make it part of our own senses and our own creation. It's amazing. Most animals have very limited ability to do that. A bird can make a nest. You know, a little mouse may burrow a hole, but their ability to change their environment is extremely limited and small. It comes mostly from a group soul, which gives them all pretty much the same way of doing things. Whereas with humans, we have individual souls, which means that each human has a single soul that allows us to be extremely creative, as well as these extra senses I told you about. Put together, it allows us to do the most amazing things. The individual soul came from the fact that it used to be a soul of many different kinds of life forms, and it developed itself into becoming, eventually, an individual kind of soul. It does so in a very complicated and convoluted way, which I'm not going to go into at this time. But just think of it that way. It's the simplest way to understand it. It's not quite accurate, but it's as close as we could come without spending hours explaining the whole thing. Now, so we have individual souls. We have more senses and senses that tell us about our own creator. We are able to adapt much more readily. We're able to change or create our environment infinitely more than any other kind of animal. And we aren't even really an animal. We're just sort of an amalgam of taking an animal and bringing into it the consciousness and senses of a human being, sort of redeveloping it into something much greater. So we're really not monkeys with bigger brains. We are something entirely different that really resembles our own creator much more so than any animal. Okay, that's all wonderful, but then what are humans supposed to eventually do? Since civilization is the ability to take in and extend ourselves through it in life to the point where we, through our collective civilizations, can create entirely new types of planets. It's very important to understand this concept because most people think otherwise. Most people think that humans are destroying nature. We're spoiling it. We're making it so that nothing will live. Well, we do when we're selfish, but that isn't the design. The design is really for us to take it to the next level, of which there are really seven different next levels to go through. We have been through several of these seven different levels, and it's important to understand that in some cases, we've only been somewhat successful at each level in really bringing in life and increasing it. Sometimes our civilizations have destroyed more life than they have brought in. That's an unsuccessful civilization, and it tends to retard the development of God within this planet. That's what we're here for. We're here to grow God more by taking charge over all of the life in the world and pre-life and making it into something truly remarkable, truly better than it could ever have been, something that is beautiful. By beauty, I mean that there is a perfect balance between the spiritual side of life and the material side. And instead of there being environmental competition and survival of the fittest, which is some people refer to as evolution, the evolution changes into a sort of designed creation made by us. We can use evolution as part of that if we want, as our choice, but we don't fall into it because we aren't ourselves fighting among ourselves and destroying each other and destroying life to see who's going to survive and who won't. That sort of thing will destroy us and the planet if it continues. We are not here to continue evolution. We are here to end the, we'll say, basis and need for evolution, which is forces and conflict. We're here to eliminate conflict, not to increase it. Many of you are saying, well, wait a second, that isn't what we're doing. Well, I know that. I know that we have screwed up and we're still doing it right now as I speak. But the point is that I'm talking about what we're supposed to be doing, not what we are doing, and what we will be doing, hopefully, and not what, if we don't do it, will be a very, very bad end. If human beings do not get out of this more evolutionary, more, you know, treating ourselves like we are and acting as we are animals, then the result is going to be that we destroy ourselves and all life on this planet and the planet itself. That's going to be the result. I hope that you don't think I'm threatening anybody. I'm just, like, reporting. It's not that I'm desiring this to happen either. I'm just saying that this could happen if we don't make some changes. How do we make these changes? Well, one way to understand this is that the humans are replicating the senses that were developed by life forms over many, many eons of time on this particular planet. We developed eventually five senses in life forms as a group that became senses of the planet. And then humans added these two extra so that now humans include all the spiritual senses. But what we're supposed to be doing with these senses is unifying them within ourselves and allowing ourselves as a life form to bring about a spiritual evolution, if you want to call it that, or spiritual development. We have to do this. And at present, we're separating our senses by separating ourselves. Each individual human being is responsible to try to interact with other human beings in a collective way, to work together, to try to help all life to grow. That's what we're supposed to be doing. Now, if we don't do that, if we become separative, we call it selfish, in our processing and in our way of relating with each other, and if we do this collectively at a large scale, then all the senses that we're supposed to be bringing together to create beauty in the world will be separated, and only ugliness will remain. And the planet will decay into a destructive state in which life cannot survive. All right, how far have we gotten, and where do we need to go, is my questions and answers I will give you now. We have come a bit of the way. We have been through the following kinds of development of sense. We've developed a sense of God in the highest realm. We have developed a sense of understanding God in a lower sense, just that God exists and we know that it is here as a loving, creative being, but we don't understand all of its creations from the second sense. And we have this in three different ways. We do it mentally, we do it feeling-wise, astrally, and we do it physically. Yes, we sense the world around us while we're physically alive. We have been doing this for a very long time. Actually, we've been doing it for tens of millions of years before we were from physical form. And for millions of years since we've been in physical form. So it's important to understand that human beings have been around a bit longer, considerably longer, than what has been discovered so far. But the remnants of them are harder to find as you go back in time. It's very important to realize that we have those two senses that I said right from the get-go, going back in time that were being developed, while we developed our ability to communicate with each other, which is the throat chakra. And then we developed our sacral center a little bit, but not much, by coming out of animals. But that hasn't been, you know, the most, we'll say, important focus at times, but it was a focus then later on over a period of time in which we developed more, we'll say, of who we are as human beings. And then we also developed ourselves through mental thinking and through many types of mental thought. And I skipped over the astral part. We developed ourselves astrally as well through our solar plexus center. Each one of these develops a whole race of human beings. We have come through entire races, with each race having a seven sub-races to it. It may not be apparent to you right now, but it is a fact that we have been around for a long time, and there have been some civilizations that many people don't know about. But if you take into account all the different civilizations, we have been going through a development in which we have been, I would say, successful about a third of the time. Two-thirds of the time we have failed up to now. What does that mean, bottom line? It means at the present time, the world is imbalanced, and two-thirds of the life that we incorporated within our own civilizations, we have done so in ways that have been selfish and separated, instead of brought together God within what we created. That's not too good. Two out of three times, we created something that was ugly and dark, and eventually was destroyed. One-third of the time, so far, we have created something that's enlightened and good, and has remained more or less as a point of beauty, enhancing the beauty of our own civilization and of the world in general. That's not good at the present time because things are going very fast, and we have to do something more than what we have been doing to improve in these realms. We've got a chance to do this by doing the following. We have to, in the next, number of centuries, we have to improve our response and adaptability so that we are no longer so self-focused and where we are working mostly together. While we do this, a number of things will happen. The conflicts that happen in the lower kingdoms will reduce. There won't be as many poisonous substances created in the chemical realm. There'll be much fewer, we'll call it radioactive disasters, and we will have the ability for plants to grow and harmonize so that they will work together. Weeds will become less of a problem. Types of plants will develop that will become much more intelligent and much more helpful. And animals themselves will become much more compatible among each other and much less competitive and far less dangerous to human beings, be they mosquitoes to certain types of venomous snakes to you name it. It will become less of a problem for human beings. We also learned that there are many things that animals have that we can use to help us in our civilization. Just recently, in the last year or two, we've discovered that certain types of reptiles, especially alligators, have antibiotics in them that are amazing. We thought most antibiotics came from plants, but actually now we're thinking that animals may have a whole new source of helping us to treat diseases that presently are becoming very resistant to treatment. In addition, bacteria and viruses become much less dangerous because they also will evolve and change in a more spiritual fashion. We will be able to change them ourselves and use them in ways that are beneficial rather than destructive. It's important to understand that as time moves on, we will become more and more the masters of what it is that is going to happen to everything around us. Right now, it doesn't seem that way because it's only been a few decades where this has been obviously true to me, but not so much to others. It will become obviously true by the end of this century. In other words, almost everybody is going to adopt, I believe, the thought process that this is our planet to make or destroy as we choose to do so. And it won't be up to any, we'll say, haphazard type of outside occurrence. It's going to be really due to what we choose to do. Now, it's important also to understand that at some point in the not too distant future, we are going to become able to do some things that we today consider to be impossible. I'm not talking about just, traveling to distant stars or something like that. I'm talking about our abilities will change as we unify our senses by unifying our interactions together. And as we spiritually discipline ourselves and choose to use our minds and bodies in ways that glorify and help to develop more of our Creator rather than to be destructive to life. This is critical. How much are we going to do in the near future to change this? Well, I don't know. That's really going to be a crisis circumstance that we will face in the next 10 to 20 years. That's how long it's going to take for us to work this thing out and to determine if we're going to really make it or not. I think the next 15 years will probably be the most critical years that we've had in the last millennia to deal with. Why is that? Because of what I said earlier. We are at the point right now where we are changing our position in relationship to other life on the planet. We are becoming the masters of what's going to be created. It's so amazing. We are going to be able to literally change almost anything in our environment, but we have to adapt to the changes we're creating. The adaptation comes from our own inner sense of reality and our ability to either live in a spiritual sense or live selfishly. If we choose the selfish route, the processes that are in hand are so swift that we may lose control over that which we have created, good or bad, and the results could be disastrous. Global warming can go way out of control. We can lose billions of people, if not, we'll say, three-fourths or more of all the life in the world, including everything I've just mentioned in terms of life, could be gone. We could reach a point where the planet can only support a small fraction of the life that it supports even today. Thousands of species are going extinct every year, and part of that is because the change of the race. Some of it's natural, but most of it is being increased by the pressures of human beings who are choosing to be separative and selfish in their ways of responding. What can we do to make the difference? We need to be reflective inside and out. We need to be interactive in ways that are helpful. We need to realize the problems we're facing and very quickly, I mean like within the next few years, start making individual changes that may not be directly recognizable by other people, but we have to choose to do this because we recognize that all of us have to do this in a majority sense, or the planet will not survive. Some of the things that we can do are to conserve energy. Energy right now is our biggest enemy. It doesn't have to be, but it is. It's our enemy because we misuse it. We abuse it. We waste it. Instead of using it intelligently, which converts it into a form of light, we use it unintelligently, which produces death and a reduction in life, makes us extremely unadaptable as beings, and produces a non-creative lifestyle. In other words, just by the wasteful use of vehicles that use up tremendous amounts of energy to get us around, we are reducing the amounts that we can gain of being creative in our lives. We're shutting down our resources that we could be using for much greater things because we're using so much energy to move one or two people, 20, 30, 40 miles, whatever it might be. It's ridiculous. It's harmful. It's destructive. And we don't seem to be aware of it. We seem to be numb to it. That's just one example. We do this in almost every area of our life. We're wasteful of energy. We're also wasteful of life itself. We don't recognize, and we need to recognize, how important all life is. As we start to become more aware of how important life is, we become aware of how every form of life contributes to our own. And we see there's this symbiosis, and we have greater respect for our own creator as well as for other human beings. Tolerance becomes much greater in someone who is choosing to become connected with and part of the better parts of all other people. Look around you. If all of us did this, looked around us and said, what's the best part of each person that I know? How can I help that part to grow? How could I grow more of that within myself? And how can I share this with others and let others know about it? Those are important questions. Those are important ways of reflecting on and improving our adaptability to the problems that we're facing. How many of us are doing that? How many of you have done that today? It's important that we start doing this on a daily basis, and we don't have much time left. We've got maybe 5 years. I'm not even sure of that. After that, what's going to happen is our ability to adapt will drop to the point where we'll be in crisis. We will find that almost every area of life will become such a struggle that we'll have to pick which crisis to deal with in that year of our life. And in the meantime, the other things that we have reached beyond in terms of being able to solve, some people call it a tipping point, will be too great, and we will suffer immensely, and life will decrease. Remember, this world is a way of growing more of our Creator. If we don't succeed in these things, if we are not able to make the adjustments I'm talking about and the changes, the results are going to be that we will all suffer and we will all regret the life that we had while physically alive in this century. This is a difficult time for all of us, but it's most important for those of you hearing me to think about what I'm saying, because you're probably the most likely candidates for making the changes that will help many other people to change. It's really important. Just to let you know, we, the group that I'm a spiritual group I'm a member of, are very interested in trying to help the world. We're doing it in many different ways. One of them is using alternative energy approaches. Very important stuff. If you're interested in that, contact us. Let us know about it. We'll tell you how you might be able to help in some ways. If you're interested in any of the things that we're doing, and I've named some of them on other shows, then let us know. Because remember, part of this process is for us to connect together. If we don't connect together, we will not solve the problems. They're too big for individuals to face. We have to connect together. We have to use our senses to unify ourselves as a single sense of the planet, a sense in which the planet becomes more beautiful by us becoming much greater in creation of virtue, of light and form, of our own Creator around us. We have to do this. Where are we missing the biggest boats besides energy? Energy is the biggest, I think, at the present time. That's why everything seems to be so focused around it. That has to do with the third ray going out of focus right now and the fourth ray coming in. But the fourth ray coming in puts another character on the situation. We're also missing it in terms of our art, in terms of our expression of the greater things around us. Look at the movies that have been coming out. Most of them are pretty bad. Few of them are good. Most of them are pretty bad. Why is that? Well, they've lost creativity. They've also lost a sense of beauty. They don't have a spiritual balance. Most of them don't have a spiritual message. Most of them are missing any kind of meaningful expression of what it means to be human. They have within them dark, destructive, oftentimes deadly expressions, and violent, and sometimes purient, and an attempt to get us involved with the most selfish, negative, hostile, lacking good sense type of thoughts and feelings and behaviors. This is the sort of stuff that is happening. And you ask yourself, well, why? Well, it's happening because we have lost our own way in terms of seeing what beauty really is and how to develop it. Okay, I'm going to have to wrap this up for right now because we're running out of time as usual. And let you know that if you have a chance, listen in on Sunday, 1170 a.m. in the northeastern part of the country, from 4 to 5 Eastern, or whatever time you happen to be in, The Lost Continent of Atlantis, Part 4. Listen in to that on WDISAM.com if you're not in that part of the country, anywhere on the Internet. Anyone listening on the Internet can get it that way. Also, Creating Virtue, Monday, April 21st, over at Borders Books and Music in Mesa. For those of you who didn't get all that, I think you can get it on our website, so it is available. In conclusion, I got about 40 seconds here, so I hope tonight's show gave you an idea that we as human beings are really the archetypes of what's going to happen to this world. Don't think it's going to come from outside. Aliens are not going to come and save us. We have to save ourselves. I've given you quickly some ways of doing that. I'll talk about many more of these ways at other times and other shows if you didn't get it tonight. And also, you can call me anytime. If you want to talk more about this, you can email me. I'm available. Hey, I'm here. We're here. We're here to try to help. Okay, until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is. Thank you.
Thank you.